Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com. Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken?, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the first episode, a conversation with Dean Susan Fournier, where she answers the question at the heart of the show.
From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Kimberly Atkins, in for David Folkenflik, and this is On Point.
Christmas has arrived. See the snowflakes in the sky. Santa Claus is coming to town. All the kids, they're jumping up.
Tis November, and that means the Hallmark Channel's annual countdown to Christmas is, yes, already in full swing, on the way to airing 40 original holiday movies. Millions will be tuning in for holiday cheer and a respite from the real world, a formula that has delivered a decade-long tradition of record ratings for the Hallmark Channel in the lead-up to Christmas. This hour on Point, our need for feel-good TV in a topsy-turvy world. Join us. Do you watch Hallmark Christmas movies? Why or why not? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. With us now from Los Angeles is Michelle Vickery, Executive Vice President of Programming and Network Publicity at Crown Media, where she oversees all production and original programming for the Hallmark Channel. Michelle, welcome to On Point.
Kimberly, hello. Thank you for having me.
No, thank you. So I saw in an interview you once said, we own Christmas, talking about the Christmas movies on the Hallmark Channel. What is it about these movies and why does the Hallmark Channel make this such a focus?
Well, as you know, we are part of a bigger family. The Hallmark brand is one of the most iconic brands in American history, and over 100 years of making people feel good, people feel connected, people engaging in relationships and in love and romance and connectivity. And so 20 years ago when we said, you know what, this needs to be an entertainment property and it needs to be called Hallmark Channel. And now today where we have four entertainment properties, people knew exactly what that was supposed to mean. And it's all of those brand attributes that I just mentioned. And I think the interesting thing is that we deliver on what people expect, and they want to feel good at Christmas, and we are here for them.
Now, 40 movies, though, that's an awful lot. How do you decide how many movies, what kind of films to produce, and sort of talk a little bit about the road that led you to realize that there is a demand for 40 Christmas movies in one year?
So I would say, you know, 10, 12 years ago, we were making Christmas movies with the expectation of people watching them and thinking about Hallmark and Christmas. And we said there's actually a bigger play here for us, that we, because of our brand and because of the positive nature of the brand, we can do more for people. So each year we increased what we were doing. And that wasn't just the number of movies. It was the quality of the movies. And we pushed our development teams to do a bigger and better job in developing more great stories about Christmas with bigger stars, and then start sooner and go later. And the bigger we got, the bigger we got, essentially.
Well, I want to play a little bit from a 2006 film called The Christmas Card. And it was one of the first films to help Hallmark realize it could go all in on Christmas in November and December. It was the network's first original movie and has continued to air every holiday season since its debut. In this scene, the character Faith, portrayed by Alice Evans, reads a postcard from Cody, a soldier who just returned from Afghanistan and is under the impression that Faith has a boyfriend.
Dear Faith, I've fallen in love with you twice now. Once, when this beautiful woman swiped some of my crispy curly fries. And then the first time, when a thoughtful, tender woman sent me this card. I want to thank you for showing me how amazing love can make me feel. I hope all your dreams come true. Cody.
Michelle, how have these movies changed over time, or is there a formula that you more or less stick with?
I think, you know, a formula is excuse me, a formula is an interesting word in the, you know, in the vein of the best romantic comedies, which is what we do on Hallmark Channel, where for instance, in a Nora Ephron romantic comedy, you see Meg Ryan and Tom Hanks in the first scene. You pretty much know they're going to get together. Is that a formula? I love it. Yes, it is. And we aspire to do that. And same with romantic dramedies. I think what we have done is just continue to evolve our storytelling and continue to look for different ways where our romantic leads, particularly our strong women, are trying to find their way in the world in addition to all of the aspirational and fantasy elements of a fun romantic comedy or dramedy. Gets people to a place where they feel a little bit better for having spent 2 hours with us watching a Hallmark Channel Christmas movie.
I want to get to some of our callers. Sydney is calling from Troy, Michigan. Hi, Sydney.
Hi.
Go ahead.
Hi, Sydney.
Hi. I just wanted to say I love Christmas movies, especially from the Hallmark. I record them so I can watch them year-round because you never know when you just need a Christmas movie pick-me-up. It really is nice to be able to turn on the TV and know that there will be some drama and there will be some intrigue, but at the end of the 2 hours, everything will end up happy.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Thanks for that call, Sydney. I want to put that to you. And Michelle, also talk about, you mentioned these strong women characters. Mm-hmm. I know a couple of actresses who are called the queens of the Hallmark Channel.
Yes.
Candace Cameron Bure and Lacey Chabert, who we will hear from a little later. What is it about their performances that resonate in a way that draws fans like we just heard?
Well, I just want to, if I could for a second, say thank you to Sydney because she really highlighted what we hear all the time. People don't just say, oh, I like a show on Hallmark. They say, thank you so much for what you do because it makes me feel a little bit better. And we are different than many of our competitors in that we take really great pride in taking good care of our audience and taking good care of our viewers. And to the second part of your question, I think that the actors that we work with, and we do things a little bit differently than other networks, we create a family of extraordinary talent who look to really embrace the season, embrace what people are looking for, and they have created great brands around themselves, Lacey and Candace both included, that really speak to what Sydney is talking about, and that is sometimes people just want to feel good, and there's a lot of great programming out there that is dark and edgy, but that's not the only part of the human experience. And we think that that where we live, which is for people to feel positive and happy, is also equally important. And so I appreciate Sydney's question.
And Michelle, I want to talk about, you know, you have these leading women and you want these stories to be feel good and positive. But, you know, sometimes they do seem to follow a formula of a woman maybe being uprooted by some sort of life change. Here comes this knight in shining armor. That's not every woman's definition of happiness. Is there some concern that there's some, you know, it's an old-fashioned notion?
I think there is, you know, in great storytelling, we obviously go to a lot of the ways that you tell stories that do connect with particular themes. But what we ascribe to do is to make sure that all of our characters' journeys are about themselves and not about the external that drives them to make choices. And we are very particular in development to make sure that the choices that our characters make come from something that they need to fill within themselves.
And on that note as well, mm-hmm. how have these movies changed over time? Have you focused on trying to broaden the diversity of the characters, racially, geographically? Is it just about Christmas? Can we bring in other holidays as well? How have you tried to focus to keep it current?
Well, we have our first two Hanukkah movies this year, which we're really excited about, Double Holiday and Holiday Date. We also have done a lot of work around expanding diversity. And I think in terms of evolving our movies, we are working with new stars. We have Kristen Chenoweth. We have Blake Shelton. We're going to new places. We have Christmas in Rome, Christmas at the Plaza, which I'm very excited about. And so we are expanding where we can take people at Christmas and at the holiday season and who our stars are that are talking to and relating to people like Sydney.
All right, we're going to pause just for a moment here. We're discussing the allure and the message of the Hallmark Channel holiday season movies. We'll also be joined soon by Emily Walderwerf, who's a critic at large for Vox, and also by Hallmark star Lacey Chabert. You can join the conversation. What questions do you have? Do you relate to the characters in Hallmark Channel films? Do you watch them for an escape from the real world? I'm Kimberly Atkins. This is On Point.
Snow is falling. Everyone is so happy to be here. Santa Claus is coming along just to bring you some cheer. While snow is falling down, how can you be blue?
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken?, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. These days, it's hard to ignore the debate over the role business should play in society.
There's crescendo around profit, period. Is profit bad? Is capitalism evil? These themes are out there.
Is this criticism of business warranted? And if so, how do we fix it? Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the first episode of the Is Business Broken podcast.
This is On Point. I'm Kimberly Atkins. We're going behind the scenes of a Hallmark Channel Christmas. What do you think about the characters in Hallmark Channel films? Do the plots resonate with you? Is there enough diversity? How do you think women are portrayed? Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. With me is Michelle Vickery, Executive Vice President of Programming and Network Publicity for the Hallmark Channel. And also joining us is Emily Vanderwerf. She's a critic at large for Vox, and previously she was the TV editor for the AV Club. Emily, welcome to On Point.
Hello, it's so good to be here.
And Emily, I want to turn to you. What do you think of the idea of these movies? Do they really offer the kind of escape from the reality of life?
I will tell you this. I could not watch them 100% of the time. I think that I would lose my mind. But watching them, you know, for a few hours every Christmas, like especially if you've got the family gathered around you, it is a really kind of wonderful weirdly wholesome thing to do. And yeah, like there is, I do like the idea of offering this sort of fantastical escape from, you know, what we know to be real, which is kind of, even at the holidays, is kind of slow and drudging and dark, and the skies are spitting out snow and all of that. So I do like the way that Hallmark sort of offers an escape from that. Again, could I watch them 100% of the time? No, but nobody, you know, I don't know that anybody should watch anything 100% of the time.
Well, you say that you see that their escape, that they offer that escapism, but you also use the word weird. What do you attribute the rise in the popularity of these movies to?
You know, there just isn't really anything on television that is targeting this audience in the way that it's being, that is, you know, Hallmark is targeting it. Certainly Hallmark has competitors, Lifetime, Up, Netflix. They've all launched very similar movies in recent years, and yet Hallmark sort of always ends up out in front. And I think that this is an audience that watches a lot of television. It tends to be a little bit older, not as old as you'd think. It tends to be a little bit wider and not as white as you'd think, but then, you know, the network television mean. But it's definitely an audience that, like, isn't being reached by some of the other networks. There has sort of been a push to chase, you know, a little bit darker, more realistic, grittier television, for lack of a better way to put it. And sometimes that's great. Some of those shows are my favorites, but we just have not seen, you know, often these kinds of nice escapist fantasies of, like, nice people living in nice towns and doing nice things for each other. We don't see that as much anymore. And I think the Hallmark Christmas movies especially hit that at a time of year when, you know, that's one of those things that we kind of want to believe to still be true.
We have a lot of callers who want to chime in. I want to go to Marcia, who's calling from Lexington, Kentucky. Hi, Marcia.
Hi. I just wanted to say that the Hallmark Channel is not for me. It's really boring. It's really predictable. And it's nothing I'm ever going to turn on, even to try to relax. And then there is my husband, and he's a university professor in neuroscience, of all things. And if he's watching TV, it's the Hallmark Channel. And I will look at him and think, you know, you've got to be asleep. And he's not. He's actually laughing in all the right places. Or he's saying, oh, look at this. Doesn't this remind you of Christmas in New England or something like that? He's actually into it, and it's the biggest break in the world for him.
So thank you for that call, Marcia. Michelle, speak to that a little bit. I mean, it is the audience. Clearly, it's not just women who are watching these shows. There are university professors who are digging it, too. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, I love that he's a professor of neuroscience, because I think that's exactly what we provide people, is a release from some of the things in the world that people are tired of hearing about. There's a 24/7 news cycle that has to be fed every day. There, as Emily said, there is a plethora of content that is out there that is dark and edgy and really great. And then life is hard. And when you come home, sometimes your brain needs to feel good. And I think that's what we do really well. And making people feel positive and making people live in the place, in the human experience, where things are positive and things turn out okay and life is good. Life is good in a lot of ways, and it's not as bad as it's made out to be. And we live in that place, and we remind people that life is good.
Right.
And I think that's, yeah. That's
okay. Carol is calling in. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, that's okay.
Carol is calling in from Blythewood, South Carolina. Hi, Carol.
Hi. My question is about diversity. I am an avid Hallmark Channel watcher. I watch throughout the year, especially around Christmas. But I'm kind of disheartened that there aren't enough people of color in primary roles, in secondary roles or supportive roles, yes, but not as stars. There are no, as I can see, Latino, Asian, or African-American Hallmark stars. And I'd like to know why and if something can be done about that.
Thanks for the call, Carol. Michelle?
Yes, and we understand that. And it hasn't just been a Hallmark problem. It's been an industry problem. And much of the industry, like us, have been catching up to make sure that we represent the United States as it is completely. So this year we have and we've been doing that work, and we understand and acknowledge that. This year we have a fantastic slate of Christmas movies. We have Patti LaBelle and Holly Robinson-Pete, and they're going to sing together, which I can't wait to see. I haven't seen it yet because they're still in production, A Family Christmas Gift. We have Tamara Mowry and Brooks Darnell in A Christmas Miracle. We have Chaley Rose and Rome Flynn in Christmas Duet. And I think that she's absolutely right in stating that not only Hallmark, but the industry needs to be more representative of the United States, and we are doing that work to get to that place.
Emily, I want to you to talk a little bit about this issue, too, with diversity. You're a critic at large for Vox. Do you see this also as an industry-wide problem, or is there something about the formula of these movies that you think that make it tougher for the cast, these leading roles, to be featured, to feature people of color?
I want to give Hallmark some props. I wrote an article about them in 2017 and sort of was a little bit hard on their diversity initiatives. And they have made really substantial steps in 2018 and 2019 to sort of correct those. I do think they lag a bit behind the industry overall. You know, this is a conversation we were having in wider industry circles in, you know, the early 2010s. And it's really kind of just come to Hallmark, and I hope that they continue to move forward in these efforts. But I do think they are making progress, and I'm hopeful to see that continue. Where I do feel like they could perhaps have more progress is perhaps on characters from the LGBTQ spectrum. We don't see a lot of that on Hallmark at all, even in supporting parts, and I'd love to see more of that in the future as a queer lady myself.
And I want to note that Danny Glover co-starred in The Christmas Train, which is a 2017 Hallmark Channel movie, in addition to the roles that Michelle mentioned. Joining us now on the phone from Los Angeles is Lacey Chabert. She'll be starring in her 8th Hallmark holiday movie, Christmas in Rome, on November 30th. You may also know her from her leading roles in the 2004 hit film Mean Girls and the television series Party of Five. Lacey, welcome to On Point.
Thank you so much. Hi.
And I want to start off by playing a clip from that film, Christmas in Rome, that is coming up. You play Angela, an independent-minded American tour guide who is fired from her job in Rome just before Christmas. She crosses paths with an American executive named Oliver, portrayed by Sam Page, who hires Angela to be his tour guide. Let's listen to them checking out the Colosseum.
Can you believe that was created in less than 10 years?
Now that's productivity. Oh.
Just curious, do you ever think about anything other than business?
Hey, I am taking the time to appreciate my surroundings. For instance, there is a very nice Christmas tree.
Oh, yeah, that's the thing about Rome. They know how to celebrate Christmas.
And it's clear that you know how to celebrate Christmas too, Lacey, your 8th Christmas film for the network. What is it about these roles that attract you to them?
You know, growing up, my family and I, we always had certain movies that we watched every year that became a part of our tradition. And I just love Christmas so much. Like, personally, I'm ready to celebrate Christmas now, now that Halloween is over as of last night. And I love being a part of the Christmas movies because it's really fun for me when people stop me and say, you know, one of your Christmas movies has become a part of our family's tradition. I love that. I feel honored to be a part of it. And I think it's some things that have been touched on already, but just from my personal point of view, like, I think it's nice to be able to sit down and have your family around and just be put in a good mood, watch something that's uplifting and that puts you in the Christmas spirit. I think it is a nice escape.
And, you know, these roles are a departure for a lot of our listeners who do know you from films like Mean Girls. Talk a little bit about that departure and focusing at least increasingly more on movies, these feel-good films that come at the holiday season.
Well, you know, I'm an actress. I've been doing this my whole life, and I want to be versatile in the work that I choose and am a part of. And, you know, I've been actually very, very, very blessed and fortunate to have been a part of many different types of projects. I mean, I started in theater. I was on a television series for 6 years. And, you know, those are unique experiences. So it's not like I only want to do one thing, but I have found such a nice home with Hallmark. And Michelle and Bill and Randy and everyone there, Michelle in particular. Hi, Michelle.
Hi.
I can say they're just wonderful people to work for, and it's something that I don't take for granted. And I'm particularly appreciative that they are so collaborative with the actors. And, you know, now that I'm a mom, I have a 3-year-old daughter. I mean, I worked for them when I was pregnant. I bring her with me on set. Mm. It's just been very, it's been really nice for my life and where my life is at this point. And at the end of the day, I'm happy to be a part of something that spreads joy. It's actually quite simple. You know, and with every movie, we try and elevate it and make the newest one better than the last and tell stories that are important.
Okay. I want to get to some more callers. Jude is calling in from Dayton, Ohio. Hi there.
Hello.
Go ahead.
I'm delighted to be... Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, you're on.
Oh, thank you. I'm delighted to be on. I love Hallmark movies, especially year-round, but especially at Christmas on both Hallmark and Hallmark Movies and Mysteries. And I know someone mentioned something about, the woman is kind of always saved at the end. And I want to push back against that a little bit. I see the movies more... that by the end, the two main characters have saved one another. It doesn't seem to me to be such a woman damsel rescued. It's more people experiencing transformation and coming together and building something new. And that kind of positivity is wonderful. And my other point is, I heard someone mention something about, oh, they're kind of predictable. And there is a huge comfort in something that's predictable. And also, those things are very difficult to write and execute. Think of trying to write a sonnet and figuring something in an exact form. Mm-hmm. And Hallmark does it so well. And I want to thank them for featuring their actors and their authors on Home and Family, because I love that behind-the-scenes thing.
Well, Jude,
huge fan here.
Thank you for the call. I want to ask Lacey, you know, we've been having this discussion about women's roles and what they mean. And you are a professional woman, you are a mother, and you are playing these characters. You are bringing these characters to life. Talk a little bit about your view of these characters, these women. Do you see them as modern? Do you understand some of the criticisms that that people may make about them?
Sure, but I really appreciate the point that the caller just made, where the characters end up saving each other in a way, or not even saving each other. I prefer to saying they change each other, they influence each other. And we always look for that pivot point in the script. You know, where is it where the other person gets the other character's attention and causes them to look inward and possibly does change something about them or pushes them to be their best self? And I think those are all very, very, very important themes that do occur throughout all of the movies. And as far as, like you were saying, being predictable, I hear a lot that what the caller also just said is there's such a comfort in knowing that there will be a happy ending. And, you know, it's our job to make that journey as interesting as possible and, as you know, try and make it different from the last. Mm-hmm. But I think there's something very valuable in knowing that, you know, at the end, a character will find love and there will be closure in a way. And I love that part of the story.
And Michelle, before we let you go in the little bit of time we have left in this segment, what is coming next? Are there continued efforts to expand the folks who are in these films? I know Emily mentioned the LGBTQ community mm-hmm. and others. Where do you see these movies going in the years ahead?
Well, you know, it's very complicated, for sure, because we have such huge success. And Lacey will tell you that when she goes into the grocery store or runs errands, that and she has a huge body of work that people talk to her about. But one of the things they do is they stop her and not only ask her which Christmas movie is she doing this year and what's it all about, they will recount in great detail her Christmas movie from last year and the year before. And as you said, she's done we're in the eighth year. So I think the big thing for us is to continue giving people like Jude what they want, which is to feel good. And as Lacey said, find that comfort in knowing that life is good in so many ways, and continuing to expand what we do. We are looking at all kinds of stories. We look for stories in the LGBTQ community. We look at stories, as I said, we have two Hanukkah movies this year we're really excited about. Mm-hmm. And I think continuing to expand what we do is critical while still giving people that feel-good moment at Christmas.
All right, Michelle Vickery, Executive Vice President of Programming and Network Publicity at Crown Media, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. Happy holidays.
And Lacey and Emily, stick with us. We're talking about the feel-good allure of Christmas movies. I'm Kimberly Atkins, and this is On Point.
You're all I want for Christmas.
Did you kill Marlene Johnson?
I think you're one of the first people to have actually asked.
From WBUR and ZSP Media, this is Beyond All Repair, a new podcast about an unsolved murder that will leave you questioning everything.
Somebody should be in jail for murdering my sister.
A woman who's never been believed.
As long as they think I have done this, then they're not looking for who actually did this.
And that's what makes it a cold case.
No, it's a botched case.
And a search for the truth, once and for all.
Wow, it just gets more interesting.
Beyond All Repair. Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts.
Be careful. You're digging in a place that's been very peaceful for a while.
Do it anyway. Dig.
This is On Point. I'm Kimberly Atkins. We're discussing the outsized success of the Hallmark Channel's original holiday movie lineup and what it says about us. You can join the conversation. Why are you tuning in during the holidays? Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. With me is Lacey Chabert. She'll be starring in her eighth holiday movie, Christmas in Rome, on November 30th. And Emily VanderWerf, critic at large for Vox, is also with us. I want to start off by playing a clip from one of these films, Nine Lives of Christmas, in which fireman Zach Stone, who's played by Brandon Routh, is a bachelor who doesn't believe in love or commitment until a stray cat named Ambrose shows up at his door and finds that companionship might not be a bad thing. He ends up falling for Mary Lee, a veterinary student portrayed by Kimberly Susted. Zach professes his affection for Mary Lee near the closing scene of the movie. Let's take a listen.
I love that you know how to install a stove and cook dinner. That you love animals, and I love that you know how to buy a Christmas tree. And I love that you believe in love and made me believe. And I know you want to finish school and start your practice before you find love, but sometimes it finds you when you weren't even looking. I want to jump in front of you, stop you in your tracks.
Mountain lions.
And that 2014 film, Nine Lives of Christmas, Emily, that's one of your favorites. It also demonstrates the Hallmark Channel's affinity for animals in its programming. As a dog mom, I can relate to that wholeheartedly. Emily, why do you like this film?
I mean, I am my cat's mom. And this, I think you heard it there in that clip. You had the cat meow over like the romantic coming together. And I just like, you know, a cat is there and it's wonderful. But I do think that this is one of their best movies at showing what Lacey and Michelle were talking about earlier, which is two people sort of growing together and changing each other. You know, it's not a situation where the female lead gives up a big promising career. You know, it's not a situation where anybody's giving anything up. They're just coming together and there's a kitty. What's not to like?
What's not to love about that?
And Lacey, I have to believe that in one of these eight films you've had, have you had the opportunity to have an animal as a guest star?
Yes, I have. I'm trying to think of which ones. Okay, so in A Christmas Melody, which Mariah Carey directed, which was such a fun experience for me because I've been such a fan of hers forever, and to get the opportunity to not only work with her, to get to know her, and she's a lovely, lovely person. It was a great experience. But in the final scene, Brandon Elliott and I are sitting there with our daughter, Fina, and my dog, Kitty, who has since passed, but yes, I had a chihuahua named Kitty. Mm. She was in the scene as like the Christmas puppy with a bow around her neck.
Oh.
So we shot a take with my dog, and then we also shot a take with Mariah's dog because, you know, everyone wanted their dog in it. And I'll just say the clip that was used in the end was Mariah's dog.
Oh.
my dog got the boot.
Oh, no. All right.
Well, but, you know, what's better than adding a kitty or a puppy to one of these scenes or, you know, one of the movies, especially the Christmas ones? It's sweet.
No, I get it. I know my dog would probably love to be a star as well. Steve is calling from Charleston, South Carolina. Hi, Steve.
Hi. You know, Michelle had commented that, and I think Lacey said the same thing, that these are feel-good movies. And I know for myself, that's what I'm looking for. Both my father and I, my father's 80, I'm 54. My wife and my kids laugh at me because I'm watching Hallmark films. My father and, you know, my mother's laughing at my father. But it's, you know, in our life at this time, it's what we need. A year and a half ago, my father was diagnosed with esophageal cancer. Shortly thereafter, my son was diagnosed with cancer. And as a result, what we were looking for was escapism. We're looking for something that's going to make us feel good, where at the end of the day, we're going to have a smile on our face, even though everything else that's going on around us is chaos.
Mm. Well, Steve, thank you so much for the call, and I wish you and your family all the best. Lacey, talk a little bit about what it's like. Clearly, you are in a position to touch people and at times in their lives or when they're dealing with very difficult things. Talk a little bit about that.
Yes. Well, yes, my thoughts and prayers to your family. Wow, that's a lot to be going through. You know, I know that when my father was in the hospital, he's fine now, but about 3 years ago, and my mom herself was going through a health crisis, and she's also fine, thankfully, but she had just gotten out of the hospital. So there I was in Texas with my parents, and it was one of those times in life where the roles are suddenly reversed and you feel like you're the parent. And the woman in the room at the hospital next door recognized me from the movies, and she was going through a very difficult time. And she, I spoke with her for a few minutes, and she said, I can't tell you. It almost gets me choked up just to repeat the story, but she said, I can't tell you what the movies have meant to my family. And we've been going through so much, and it's so nice to turn on the TV and find hope and just be uplifted. And for me, to get to do what I love and I'm passionate about, to get to be paid to do that, my gosh, and know that it has that kind of effect on people, that there are those certain projects that do put something meaningful into the world, it's such an honor and a privilege, I can't even say. So I hope it's something that I'm always able to be a part of, and I'm thankful to be a small part of it.
Emily, I want to turn to you too. I know you used to watch Hallmark movies with your grandmother. That's one way that you would spend time with her. Talk about it from a personal perspective, and not just as a media critic.
Yeah, you know, before my grandmother passed, there wasn't a lot on television that she loved to watch as much as Hallmark, and she would just sort of leave it on and just let the movies roll over into each other. And I have a lot of fond memories of sitting there and watching those movies with her and being like, at the start, I would be like, oh, this is kind of corny. This is kind of cheesy. And then by the end, I'd be drawn in. And I do think that part of the secret is Hallmark does not look down on its audience for wanting to see something like that. Mm. Whatever my, you know, issues with the programming as like sort of an aggregate, any individual one of their movies, even the ones that don't work as well, is like saying it's okay that you want to see things turn out well, because so much in life doesn't turn out well. And I think that other entertainment that sort of aims to be corny and sentimental often feels sort of ashamed about that. And Hallmark never does that. And I think that's a real key to their success.
Well, Emily, I want to ask you then, why haven't other networks been able to duplicate that success? I mean, of course, we see feel-good movies elsewhere and we see them in the theater, but there's really no place like the Hallmark Channel that's dedicated to this kind of film. What is it that they've done that others haven't been able to do as well?
You know, I think the only quote-unquote network that does it as well is Netflix. You do see some chatter around their Christmas movies every year, but they produce, you know, four or five. I think the reason Hallmark stands out is they produce so many. And if you don't like one, you're almost guaranteed to like another, even if, like, you only secretly like it and you're sort of being like, okay. And I think that Hallmark is really good at coming up with things that you can watch with your entire family, and by that I mean everybody from grandparents to grandchildren, and like everybody gets at least a little something out of it, even if it's me and I'm looking at my phone while my grandmother is like earnestly invested in everything that's happening. And like, that's how you build memories, sure, but I think it's also a way you build a real connection between a network and an audience.
And Allison is on the line from Durham, North New Hampshire. Hi, Allison.
Hi.
Go ahead, you're on.
Okay, great. So, hi, I'm calling. I love Hallmark Channel, as we all do. You know, I watch all year round, not just the holiday season. I think Harvest is probably my favorite. But I just heard that great answer about including more diversity, the people of color and LGBT communities. And I'm just wondering about, you know, we want to make sure that, and, you know, it's predictable. That's why I keep coming back. You know, the people, I like the predictability. I like the comfort. It is an escape from real life. But those, some of these issues are real life. You know, LGBT people, families, you know, single parents, things like that. That is real life. So I just wanted clarification on that answer, where we say, you know, we want to keep people coming back. But I think that people would keep coming back with more diversity, more families, more types of families represented. So I just kind of wanted to hear what you guys had to say about that.
Emily, what do you think about that? Do you think diversity can still be a draw?
Right. I think there's a tendency in entertainment to talk about issues affecting people of color and issues affecting LGBTQ communities as though, you know, all we do is face suffering and like all that happens to us is sad and hard. But I mean, LGBT people can fall in love at Christmas, too. People of color can fall in love at Christmas, too. Like, there is an appetite for cheesy, corny, sentimental stories about people within these communities. And I don't know why it would be any different to have, you know, a Hallmark film that is just as sentimental and just as lovely and just as Christmassy. And it ends with two women or two men kissing. Like, I think there would be something beautiful about that, and I hope that the channel pursues that.
All right. Barbara is on the line from Long Lake, New York. Hi, Barbara.
Hello.
Hi there. Go ahead.
Yes, I live up in the northern part of New York State. I'm very, very grateful for the Hallmark Channel. I think it's ageless. I'm 82 years old, but my two daughters are in their late 50s, and they're glued to it. We love the Christmas programs, of course. And I just like to say I've watched Lacey for years and Candace Cameron Bure, and when I see their names come up on the credits, I think, oh, my old friends are coming into my home. And you can always be sure that there's no violence, that love is represented so beautifully. I'm just very grateful for your channel.
Well, Lacey, I want to give you a chance to respond to that, but also to speak to this idea that, yeah, there's not bad language or violence or any of these other things. Talk as an artist about making these films that are entertaining without using all those things.
So first, thank you so much for the compliment. And I love that thought that you feel like we are friends coming into your home. And it is like a really intimate, personal experience to me. You know, having been on TV for a long time, I realized that, you know, being in someone's home is very personal and it's a privilege. And yes, I don't think it's necessary to tell a good story with violence, you know, or language. And not that there aren't amazing movies that contain those things. But, you know, I think that Hallmark does, it's what they do so well is telling a beautiful story that is a journey. And I think the most important thing for me is always making the character relatable so that people can watch it and go, oh, I feel like that could be me. Otherwise, they can't buy into your journey. You know, I feel like you have to make people feel like they see a part of themselves to want to go on the journey. And I love being a part of it.
All right, we have more callers waiting. Marcus is on the line from Lockport, New York. Hi, Marcus.
Yeah, hi. How you doing?
I'm great. Hey.
Yeah, quickly there. I watch Hallmark, not a lot, but when I do watch it, except the regular actors. But I think they're shortchanging their actors a little bit because they're better talented than that. If you look at even the original episodes of Little House on the Prairie, I mean, that's a little more higher class. I don't understand it with the quality of actors we got today.
You mean in terms of the script, you like to see them be better?
Yes.
All right. Well, Emily, what do you think about that? What do you think about the script writing on these shows as a critic?
I wouldn't put it, you know, on the top tier of television writing. It's not, you know, it can be a little predictable. It can be a little formulaic. But I do think there's a power to executing a formula well. And I think that at their best, these movies absolutely execute that formula well. And I think if you watch a lot of Hallmark, as I did for you know, a couple years to write this article, I think if you watch a lot of it, you get a real sense of when you make 40 movies in a year, some of them aren't going to be as good as some others. And you get a real sense of how they know which ones to like really focus their resources on. And often their strongest performers are in those movies. They give them a nice level of production values. Like, so yes, it is. I do think it's sort of a natural offshoot of making 40 Christmas movies in one year is inevitably some are going to fall a little bit short. And I do wonder sometimes if those get held against the ones that are better.
And Lacey, I want to give you the last word here as we await your film coming up. Talk a little bit about you. You said you're a mom. What do you like to watch during the holiday season? What do you watch with your family? What do you watch alone for your own escapism?
Well, I have a 3-year-old, and so we watch a lot of cartoons. We watch a lot of Sesame Street. We watch a lot of Peppa Pig, a lot of Tots. So when I actually get control of the remote control for some adult tuning in, I mean, especially right now, you know, with the holidays coming up, some of my favorites are Christmas Vacation, Christmas with the Cranks, Elf. Mm-hmm. Watch that one every year over and over again. Love Actually. Those, you know, and like I said, like especially Christmas Vacation, that was one that we always watched growing up. And it just reminds me of being a kid again. You know, and I think that's why we have traditions, because they remind you of your childhood. And now with a kid, I'm able to practically, I feel like I'm reliving my childhood in certain ways by passing on these traditions. And it's quite a magical thing.
All right. Lacey Chabert, star of the upcoming Hallmark movie Christmas in Rome. I have to say I've been a fan since Party of Five, so it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much, and I hope you guys enjoy the movie. Happy holidays.
And Emily Vanderwerf, a critic at large for Vox, thank you so much for joining us today.
It was so great to be here.
And you can continue the conversation and follow us on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm Kimberly Atkins. This is On Point. It's the slave.
Streets are-
Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. Listen on for a preview of one of the episodes featuring Susan Fournier, Alan Questrom Professor, and Dean.
So let's start this conversation with the title of the show, Is Business Broken? It's a provocative title and a question. Where did this come from? Why that question now?
We're in a big cultural moment where capitalism, business, market systems are really being scrutinized and debated, and the role of business with it. So I think the question is just on the table. It's on people's minds. It's in the news media. It's in conversations. I think there are growing voices, loud voices, especially among young people who seem increasingly to believe that business and maybe capitalism with it are harmful and create rather than solve problems for society. And what we do seem to hear are those loud voices. And they are very black and white. There are protagonists and the antagonists and the pros and the cons. And there's really no middle discussion. It's sort of like people for and against, and it's loud.
Right. For and against DEI, for instance, right? A battle at play.
Right.
The way you describe it and the way you describe the polarization, it makes it feel like very much of the digital age, right? It feels very much of today. Some of those arguments have been around, though, right? Is this criticism of business and this question, is business broken, is that a new question?
You are so right. It is not a new question. Schumpeter, he was a professor at Harvard, and he's also maybe one of the most influential political economists of the early 20th century. He called for the death of capitalism, the death of business, 100 years ago.
Okay. Wow.
And when he critiqued way back then, he said the very successes of capitalism would bring about its downfall because it would create values hostile to capitalism, and that this would particularly take hold among intellectuals who were critiquing. So there's a lot of that same kind of dynamic happening today, and that's 100 years old. But yeah, we've seen this kind of cultural fervor playbook many times in the past, often precipitated by big crises.
Find the full episode by searching for Is Business Broken wherever you listen to podcasts, and learn more about the Mehrotra Institute for Business, Markets, and Society at ibms.bu.edu.